Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very, very senior corporate leader and coach and author from India, Mr. Abhijeet Bhaduri. Abhijeet, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. What a privilege it is to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Abhijeet is the CEO of Abhijeet Bhaduri & Associates, which is the boutique consulting firm. He's an executive coach. He's earlier spent time with Wipro, Microsoft, Pepsi, and Colgate. And he is one of the most widely followed HR leaders on LinkedIn. He's also an author, and you can see some of his books behind him. So, Abhijeet, let's start talking about your journey. Tell me a little bit about how you started and what have been some of your key milestones.
Well, I grew up, studying economics in college. Mm-hmm. So I went to Delhi University, studied at the Shriram College of Commerce, SRCC, as it is popularly known as.
Yeah.
I did economics and then followed it up with a degree in law. From Delhi University. Mm. I did a master's in human resources, from XLRI Jamshedpur. Mm-hmm. The degree itself was called personal management and industrial relations when I did it. Mm-hmm. Since then I've been working in several different companies, some in India, mostly in India. I did a short stint for a couple of years in Malaysia when I had a mm-hmm. Asia Pacific responsibility, then went on to work in US for a couple of years mm-hmm. With a, in a global responsibility in the company I was in. Mm-hmm. And they came back, for the last couple of years, I've been in India. I came back and worked with PepsiCo, then mm-hmm. Microsoft, Wipro, and now last 6 years or so, I've been on my own.
Wonderful. So, I'm probably older than you, and I've often wondered, when I started after in 1979 after an MBA, the human resources function was not called human resources.
Yeah.
There used to be a personnel manager. Mm. There used to be an industrial relations manager. Mm. Over the years, it has evolved into the CHRO role. I'd love to get your perspective on the journey of this function from IR and personnel to a key C-suite executive role.
Right. So if you when you look at the role of human resources, mm. effectively it is a way for managing three dimensions. Mm-hmm. One is the way the work is done. Mm. And the way work is done means how much of automation are you going to do it largely in the factory? Is it a services thing? How much of technology are you going to use? So that's the automation part of it. Mm. That in turn determines the kind of talent that you will need. So, mm. Obviously, if you're going to work in shifts, you need shift supervisors. If you are going to, do work which requires a lot of collaboration, it requires a different kind of a profile of people, mm. some skills. So that's the talent strategy. And the third element of that is the workplace where all this will happen. So this is the organization's policies, what kind of a talent brand and all that. Mm. So over a span of time, all three of them have changed. Mm. From a time when it was a lot about, as you said, really creating policies and pretty much that was it.
Correct.
To a time when it was about, a bigger focus on law mm. and to talk about employment law, etc. Mm. Over a span of time, as, specifically, if you look at the way we've started to look at the rise of technology as it shaped work, mm. the importance of the individual, the individual's contribution mm. has become far more important. So the mm. individual is no longer a replaceable, factor of production.
Correct.
So then that is really where you start to look at talent management. Mm. Then you start to look at how do you make the workplace attractive. And if you look at the last 2 years because of the pandemic, you are in a scenario where the workplace work and the worker, all three of them have been hugely redefined. Mm. So you will therefore see a sharp shift in the way this function evolves over the next 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. So you see that because all three has changed.
Correct. Correct. So, you know, I've been speaking to several HR leaders. One was all the challenges that you have spoken about. And yet now with 2 years of the pandemic and work from home, the challenges seem to have multiplied manifold. How are HR leaders managing this duality of work from home, partly at work? And, you know, there are lots of interesting dynamics going on in organizations.
So, one of the things that the pandemic did was it shifted work from being done in a workplace kind of a setting. So you had a setting where home and work were two different places. Mm. Now, suddenly you sort of merged them together. So this necessarily will mean that, the way we will have to manage the workplace, the definition of the workplace is going to be very different. Mm. Now, if you start to manage the workplace with the same mindset as it used to be earlier, then I think you get into a problem. There's resistance and it's unfair. It's not inclusive. Mm. And there are challenges that individuals have faced. So, for example, when people moved back and started working from home, a lot of that configuration changed. I don't think we paid a lot of attention to that. We just let people manage it on their own. Now, again, when we are looking to get people back into a common place, we have to take into account that during these 2 years, they've moved into a certain kind of a work setting. Mm. So I think when organizations are dealing with this work from home policy, they would have to actually go back and not just look at the workplace in isolation, but you have to look at the way work will get done and the talent pool that sort of works with it, and then decide the workplace policies. Mm. So the sequence is always, work, worker, and workplace. Mm. And that's the sequence with which you need to design. If you start designing it at the end and you say, okay, everybody is saying, work from home, so we will do it, you're probably going to be more reactive than anything. Correct. So the way to strategize it is to say, how will work get done? How much of this? And technology lets you do so many different things today. So those are some of the possibilities that you have to explore as you are looking at it. In as much as, when you look at the work, you would say, there's a better technology to make whatever. Let's say you imagine making cups and saucers. Then this is the way to sort of make that. You would take that into account. In the same way, for every organization, work, worker, and workplace is the sequence to look at things.
Very interesting. And yet, when I've been reading about this thing called the Great Resignation, and I believe that impact is being seen in India as well. And it is being also being ascribed to the pandemic. I'd love to get your perspective on what is the Great Resignation and how is this going to impact companies as well as individuals?
So I've written a fair bit about the Great Resignation and on my LinkedIn newsletter.
Okay.
And one of the ways to sort of understand is, again, the framework that I said, work, worker, workplace. When the, so this is the first time when three things change simultaneously. So work changed because there were some things which could not be done and some things which had opened up possibilities. For example, earlier when I've done my recordings, it would be in a studio necessarily. But today, this technology allows you and me to be in two different cities and record. But at the same time, when you look at, the Great Resignation, it is predominantly a shift of how the employee, the individual, is beginning to rethink their life in this new configuration. Which is that, their personal equations have changed, the kind of emotions that they experience today because work is being done from home is different. And it is, you will therefore see the rise of emotions in the workplace. So that's one shift. Therefore, people who can manage those relationships better, build that degree of trust, et cetera. Those are going to be the most successful people. So you are looking at a time when the Great Resignation is triggered either because of more fundamental reasons that I feel that I'm not paid fairly. So that's one reason to shift and people will very quickly make up and reach the fair wage kind of a level. The second piece is that, this place offers me more flexibility. flexibility can come in multiple ways. Work from home is not just the only thing, but it can be the time. You know, can I, you know, some people are early birds. It's really like saying that if you start, you know, things at a certain kind of a time, some people have a different sleep schedule. Now, the organizations have never worried about sleep schedule.
Yeah.
Are you feeling happy or sad about, you know, waking up early? Those are factors that people can now exercise those choices.
Correct.
The third thing is that it opens up the platforms where I can start to look for work, not just in India, but outside of India as well, because, you know, technology lets me do that. That opens up possibilities. And finally, the fourth big thing is people are re-evaluating the priorities and say, okay, you know, do I really want to commute for 4 hours a day? And should I not spend that time either maybe building a different skill, creating a different source of income, spending time with my kid? All these are possibilities that people are grappling with. So I think this is a time when people are also reprioritizing what matters to them. In some cases, it's money. In some cases, it's the relationships. In some cases, it's the time. In some cases, it's creating opportunities for myself for future. So there are multiple reasons. It's not just one factor.
Is it also, Abhijit, partly because of the mindset that is changing, if the younger leadership that is now coming into the corporate world, which are millennials and the Gen Zs? Or because people, when I was growing up 4 decades ago, it was just work, work, and work.
I think you are spot on, Ashutosh. I think, you know, the importance of work and the relationship with the employer has undergone a very fundamental change. So it is not that significant, because earlier our identity was all about work. You know, so it was that, you know, people would say, the first question they would say is, what do you do? Where do you work? And which is why when, you know, we would ask women, what do you do? And if a lot of people would say, I do nothing, even though they would work from home, you know, they would be managing the home, etc. We never valued that as an important enough thing to talk about. So this is a time when we are really looking at, you know, the priorities have changed. Work is no longer the be all and end all for a lot of people, because they have seen that when it comes to the crunch, while, you know, a lot of organizations would say, you know, you're like family, you're this, you're that. When it comes to the crunch, people would sort of take a very transactional view and say, well, we can't afford to reduce our profits, and they will lay off people. So this means that people are really rethinking that, do you really care for me as much as you claim you do? And if the answer is no, you're all of my life. I have a life beyond that. And I'm the only one who cares about that. So I think mental well-being is becoming more important. We are also thinking about experiencing new emotions in the workplace, like grief. We've never been able to address things like grief in the workplace. How do you let people deal with that? And, you know, organizations are not designed to address those issues.
Well said.
So well-being has become such an important part of our lives, which didn't matter earlier so much. But, you know, there is so much of it that we have to resolve, address before we, you know, move further ahead.
And what I'm also hearing you say is that proactive leaderships are actually taking into account factors like grief or even depression at the work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is so much that individuals have undergone, you know, and grief as a feeling is not just what you experience when you lose a loved one.
Absolutely. But
grief is what you experience when you are navigating an uncharted path. You know, you don't have a map with which to navigate this particular experience. That causes grief, even though sometimes you're going from one place to a better place. You can still experience grief. So I could move to a better job financially, but I could miss the people that I'm leaving behind, or the relationships, or just the feeling of being valued. I'm losing that. Can be that. When people give up their identity of any kind, it triggers grief. So I think those are some of the new things in the workplace.
Very interesting. So let me switch gears a little bit and now ask you some different questions, again, relating to human beings. And this is for a lot of young people who will listen to our conversation. There is this often this debate, what is better, staying in what used to be called, when I joined ITC, a cradle to grave company, or jumping jobs every 2 years because you're getting a bigger job and more money. Mm-hmm. I'd love your perspective.
Yeah, sure. So I think we are looking at three different kinds of, you know, career options. I'll start with the first, which is the more traditional one, which you just described. It's a cradle to grave model. You might change employers, but effectively you do the same thing. You are an engineer. You pretty much retire as an engineer. That's career 1.0. Career 2.0 is where when you start your work, you kind of, you know, think about it like a fork. You pivot and start to chase another dream, which could be that I want to run my cafe. I want to be a musician. I want to be an artist. I want to be a writer. All those options, you know, people, when they have done, and we know a number of examples of people who've done that really successfully. So you pivot, you ride two horses at the same time, and then at some point of time, you branch off into the second one, and that becomes something that you chase, and maybe even that changes at some time.
Yeah.
What we are now seeing is the beginning, early stages of what I call career 3.0. Which is, you know, where people monetize three or more skills. And these three or more skills are, it is not multitasking. It's monetizing three different skills to create three different sources of income. So the visual for this kind of a career is, let's say it's more like a pizza slice where, you know, your income is getting divided into three or more chunks. And some chunks are bigger because they contribute bulk of your income. So think about it as if you earned $100 from your salary, this is the 100 rupees broken into three or more slices. And different skills make you go through those. So that's where you are going to see a lot more people, you know, going through that life.
Very interesting. So let me ask, change gears again, and let me now talk to you about technology.
So,
you know, I'm going back again for decades, and it was all early computers, et cetera, et cetera. I want to get your perspective on how is technology changing human resources?
You know, one sign that when technology really starts to impact a function or people or something, the more it impacts, the less visible technology is. So when you start to look at, you know, the kind of things that we do with our phone, at one point of time, when you used your phone, it was something that everybody kind of, you know, it noticed and did that. But now, you know, sending an email from your phone has become passe. You can do that. You're surfing the net. You don't need to sit down. So it's become more invisible. In the same way, when you look at technology in HR, whether it is video technology, which is you are using it for hiring because, you know, it helps you sort of hire in a certain way. It helps you screen your, you know, you don't need to have a human being screen and sort of apply their biased lenses. You can de-bias it by doing that. It sort of really shifts the distribution of work between, you know, things which are repetitive, things which are rule-based, and things which are at scale are terrific candidates for technology to handle. Things which are exceptions to the rule are better done by human beings. So if you say that, you know, this is something that applies to all employees, and technology can track that and say, okay, this is an exception, this person has done this. But when you sort of say that, yes, it's an exception, but we should allow it, that's the human decision. So that's where it has shifted even in human resources. Being able to, you know, do some things which analyze data, et cetera, is better done by technology. It's just much better.
That's right.
But let's say to now decide and say, okay, for you, here is a different career path that I could recommend. It's something that, you know, the individual does much better.
Well said. So I'm going to now come to the last segment of our conversation, and I want to talk to you a little bit about culture. I want to ask you, how do you define culture? And then I'll come to my next question.
Culture is the invisible code that tells people how to behave in a certain context. You know, so you have a certain kind of a cultural norm at home, whatever that might be. And then you have a certain cultural norm in the office, and your behavior is guided by those invisible norms. And that's really the most powerful definition of culture.
That's you know, an amazing definition. I've heard so many, but this is a great definition. And my follow-up question to you, Abhijit, is that given the huge number of startups that are coming into the ecosystem now, what goes into building a strong culture for a startup and where does it start?
Oh, what an awesome question. So in my book, Dreamers and Unicorns, I talk about the fact that, and I'm defining dreamers as any of the startups. You have a product idea, you know what to do. That's a dreamer. What makes it grow into a unicorn, not just by financial valuation, but how does it grow as an organization? What it means is the moment you cross the limit where you need more than one large dining table to sit down and work together, you should be really beginning to start thinking about the kind of culture you want to build.
Right.
Which means that, you know, all those if-then situations, your culture is therefore really like writing the algorithm for all the invisible things that will guide us.
Correct.
How do we do things when somebody does not do that? You know, so for example, are we going to allow a certain kind of behavior in the office norms? And what happens if somebody does not follow it? Does it mean termination? Does it mean a reprimand? Does it mean a recognition? And does it mean saying that, oh, we've never done this before, but that sounds like a good thing to incorporate. So it needs to be both. It cannot be, so watertight. It should not become a prison. This morning I was tweeting about a lovely article I read in The Economist where it talks about, what's the difference between a strong culture and a cult? That it does not allow for deviation of any kind. So there are certain kind of behaviors around that. But at the same time, a strong culture in some sense makes people do a number of things without thinking about it. If you don't have a strong culture, each one is exercising their own judgment. You are spending a lot of time thinking about, is this the right thing? So for example, in many schools, when they say this is the uniform, it just takes away one level of decision making.
Correct.
So in some sense, the norms that you set should take away the really irrelevant decision-making points. In some case, what is irrelevant becomes important. So for example, should you impose a uniform at work is one kind of a thing, or should you say no uniforms at work, but do you have a dress code at work? So the nuance of that is really the culture.
Very interesting. So Abhijit, my last question to you, and I have to come to your book, Dreamers and Unicorns. Tell me a little bit about your book and what was your hypothesis and motivation to write it?
So, Ashutosh, I wrote this book, Dreamers and Unicorns, just as the pandemic started. I was actually working on a different book around organization, what makes organizations grow. And so my big discovery was that, there are five forces. One is that the rise of intangible factors like brand, leadership, talent, and culture. These are the growth drivers, which is the subtitle of the book. The second thing that I noticed was that workers and workplaces are going to become boundaryless. That, it's not going to be defined by, you look at cybercrime, for example. It's very hard to sort of figure out which law to apply because law is by country or a segment, but, crime is boundaryless. The third element is how do you sort of look at the leader's role is to balance polarities. Do you work with only full-timers? Do you work with freelancers? Do you work focus on inside the organization? Do you work with people outside the organization, the analysts, stakeholders? So that's the third polarity. The fourth is the rise of emotions in the workplace, which we spoke about. Trust becomes important. Grief handling becomes important. And the fifth piece is that it's all going to be in perpetual beta. So, saying that this is the new normal is actually a false consolation because it is never going to be the new normal. It will keep evolving. So you have to be able to be open to that evolution. This is what I wanted to talk about and why leadership, talent, and culture becomes 90% of your firm's growth pattern.
How amazing. Now, I'm going to certainly go out and look for your book on Amazon, and I'm going to encourage all our viewers and listeners to go and check it out. But Abhijit, on that note, thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me about how the HR function has evolved. And, it's almost like a journey that you took me through on, how it has grown into where it is today and how it is still evolving. Thank you for talking to me about the Great Resignation. I'm certainly going to go and look at LinkedIn and your postings on that, on the Great Resignation. Thank you for talking to me about culture and how culture is beginning to evolve. And finally, thank you for talking to me about your book. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh. It's such a privilege to be able to talk to you and your audience. I look forward to staying in touch. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.